Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 877-44-TRUTH or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
I remember feeling like I was in a dream that I couldn't wake up from. A dream that I had no power to stop, although I wanted to. Walking into the hospital after the cab ride, I started getting a very sick feeling. I was sinking under the weight of the stress. I was sinking under the weight of the secrets, the lies, and the overwhelming pain of nearly 40 years of struggling with the nearly constant chatter from the girl who lived in my head. She was with me from a young age, and I couldn't get her out of my head, not even for one day. At this moment in this hospital, in this waiting room, I had never felt more alone, more twisted, or more powerless. The overall effect was like I was watching a dream and that I had as little control over events as the one who is sleeping. The only thing I could do was watch in dismay. This is a brief excerpt from the beginning of a book by a gentleman named Walt Heyer, who's actually, by God's grace, is in the studio with me today. We're going to be talking about the world of transgenderism, which now that we've got Bruce Jenner's situation out on the front page of every magazine and every website, it's all over the place. Yet another step down this interesting road that we're on as a culture, where we are normalizing essentially everything, and we get a little more numb to these things each year as America continues to go down this road. And so, what was unthought of 20 years ago is now law today. And you think that there's going to be a place where this would stop, I would remind you in the book of Jeremiah, where God reminds us that the human heart is deceitful and desperately wicked above all else. Who can know it? And what that means is only God really understands the depths of the depravity of the human heart. And we certainly would never consider ourselves that dark and that depraved, because we tend to grade on a curve. God, the creator of the universe and the creator of you and me, does not. And so there is no limit to what we will do. There is no limit to what we will try to normalize, including trying to change one's gender. Well, Walt Heyer is here in the studio today, fresh in with his wife from Arizona. What was the name of the city again?
Surprise.
That's so perfect. Surprise, Arizona. Welcome to Call to Action Radio. This is the first time Walt and I have met face to face.
Right.
I found your website because all of a sudden you're all over the place and God is using you, which is awesome. And I sent Walt an email, and lo and behold, in God's economy, Walt's like, well, we're going to be in Durham in a couple weeks. And it happened to be one of the days I'm going to be home this week. And so here you are, and welcome to Call to Action.
Yeah, thanks. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, this is an amazing story. I got through half of Walt's book, which we'll also talk about. I put these things up on Facebook today. They're on Twitter, so you can get all the links to Walt's webpage as well as to the books. He's got a number of books there. These are fabulous not only stories of God's grace and deliverance and what happened in Walt's life, but for anybody that's dealing with this subject and these things, friends, you can run and you can hide, but not for much longer. So these things are going to start coming out in the public in a much more a noticeable way, and you need to be able to engage these issues, whether it's the homosexual issue, the same-sex marriage issue, even this, transgenderism. You need to be able to engage it with a whole lot of grace, with a whole lot of mercy, with a whole lot of patience. You need to listen way more than you speak, but you need to study, and you need to get ready to have these conversations intelligently and based on things that are actually verifiable. And Walt's going to unpack his story for us today, and that'll get us at some point after the bottom of the hour. Walt will end up talking about what's going on today. But this is such an amazing story. But I know, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think we really need to go all the way back to your childhood to really be able to understand what you went through and why.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was what they would call today a trans kid, because my journey to transsexualism started when I was 4 years old, 5 years old, as my grandmother, and I always say, I don't know if I encouraged her to cross-dress me or if it was her idea. I can't really figure that one out. But the fact of the matter was that she was excited and enjoyed cross-dressing me. And as a result of that, I got excited about cross-dressing. And I could see she seemed to affirm me much greater as a female than she did as a boy. And so I was beginning to enjoy this. She began to make, she made me what I called a purple chiffon dress that she made, and she took a great deal of pride and energy into making that. And so I was starting to feed off of the energy that she was getting from seeing me dressed up as a female. And so that gave, I think, the seed to the start of gender dysphoria. And I don't think it really matters whether it was her starting it or whether I had made some comment. That's really not the thing. It's the idea that we began this journey to a confused gender state. And normally, if you do that once or twice, it's not going to plant a seed that's going to grow. But she did this for about 2.5 years.
Right.
So that continued to get reinforced, supported, and it continued to grow. And it became my alternate identity. I was struggling. I actually had two identities at that point. I had the boy everybody saw, and I had the female that was inside my head that I talked about, that I struggled with, that I couldn't share with anybody because of the shame behind that.
And you also had a pretty complex childhood in terms of what the situation was at your own home versus there with your grandmother. Do you think that factored into it as well?
Well, yeah, I think, well, once I brought the dress home, because I now was, after 2.5 years, was enjoying it. I brought the dress home so I could wear it at home, and then my mother found it, and then that blew up the house. I couldn't go to grandma's anymore. The dress disappeared, but the identity from my psyche didn't disappear. So I tried to continue to identify with that in secret or in my dreams or whatever you want to call it. And once my uncle found out, my dad's brother found out that I had been dressing as a girl, he decided that it was appropriate for him to molest me. So now I've got a grandmother cross-dressing me, the dress is gone, and I got an uncle molesting me. So, you know, the first 9 years of my life had some elements in it that were a struggle.
Have you found, and since you've been in this world for a while, Walt, and when I put out the email and things earlier today, I was like, you know, a man who became a woman who then came back to being a man. Have you found, because I know you've been in that world of transgenders and transvestites, has a broken background, broken history, broken homes, is that fairly common?
Well, what I've actually found out from not only my own life experience, but from the emails that I've gotten over the last 9 years, is that 80% of the ones who contact me and talk about regret were people who were sexually molested. The balance of 20% came from some issue, trauma, broken home, somebody died, somebody committed suicide, abandonment, loss, you know, the whole thing. So there, 100% of the time, there's some childhood trauma that went on.
Yeah. So, and that's something we need to keep in mind as we deal with being born this way, and we're going to get into that, people that are struggling with gender identity. And we have to be careful not to paint with a broad brush, because
right,
we're talking about individuals, each one of them made in God's image, each one of them with a story that, as we unpack that, and whether we're talking about somebody dealing with a gender issue or homosexuality or a homeless person or an abusive person or an alcoholic, whatever it is, everybody's got a story.
Absolutely.
And we have to listen, don't we? Don't we have to be better at listening to their stories?
And I always tell people, especially in the church, which we're not good at, we dismiss people much quicker. We should take them to the coffee shop and sit down and get to know what their struggle is. We don't have any idea what these people went through who are struggling with their gender identity and who present themselves in a way that's very troubling to us and sometimes very off-putting. But there are oftentimes very good people, very intelligent people who need our love, not our condemnation.
Yeah, exactly. Very well said. Thank you for saying that. So as you moved into kind of middle school and then the high school years, I mean, what was that life like for you at that point?
Well, you know, I still sort of migrated to girls because I was not a homosexual transgender. I had girlfriends. I was in a car club. I loved cars. I started working on cars at the age of 14. I still love cars today.
Was that a 1941 Ford?
It was a 1941 Ford. And then I eventually got a 55 Chevy and put a Chrysler Hemi engine in it. And, you know, so I had all of that male stuff going on. But at the same time, I was sharing my psyche with this female in the purple dress that was very powerful and continued to grow in power and desire in my life.
Would you describe that? Because when I was reading that in your book, I kept asking myself, is this like a split personality kind of situation? What have psychiatrists and people like that said about it?
Well, this is what they call dissociation. And, you know, we find out that you disassociate from who you really are to become someone who you're not. And that's how the term dissociation comes up. So if you then couple that with an obsessive compulsive disorder, then you're driven by this alternate personality. And because we're not dealing with treating the issue or getting to understand what treatment looks like, then the person runs off and starts cutting off body parts and really beginning the change to identify with this alternate personality that's not really who they are.
Are you starting now? You use the word treatment, and I know all of a sudden that's going to make you a public enemy number one.
That absolutely.
You weren't already. Because treatment implies that this isn't, I wasn't born this way. I wasn't born with my somehow God mixed up my gender genes inside my body. This is something that's deeply psychological. Is that right?
It is deeply psychological. And I have no intention on offending anyone at all when I say this. I look at the science, and the science suggests that I see that no one is actually born transgender. And the fact that as we develop, we think we are born that way because our environment starts at such a young age. I mean, 4 years old, it feels like that's the way
you
were born.
Yeah, what a great point. Well, I know, and you have Dr. McHugh, who you're going to be meeting with, right?
I met with him Friday.
Yeah, that's super exciting. Dr. McHugh put this in the Wall Street Journal. Amazing how this... I was shocked that this didn't hit more radar screens, because he came right out and said transgender surgery isn't the solution. And this isn't just some quack out there in the middle of nowhere. Dr. McHugh is the former psychiatrist-in-chief at Johns Hopkins Hospital. Try to remember psychiatry's clash over meaning, memory, and mind. He wrote that book, and he came right out and said, hey, transgender surgery, cutting things off, pasting things on is not the solution. We're here with Walt Heyer hearing an incredible story of God's grace and deliverance, and we'll unpack more of that with Walter when we come back right after this break. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble here on Call to Action Radio. You may have seen this. I talked about it last week. Bruce Jenner was given the Arthur Ashe Award at the ESPYs last week with ESPN. Got a standing ovation from a testosterone-laden audience full of professional athletes. And I wrote a blog post about this a couple months ago that we have turned... Bruce Jenner is now a modern-day circus sideshow. Now, people aren't going to admit to that. But we had the guys with two heads. We had the short people, the hairy people. Remember all that circus sideshow stuff? And we threw the quarter in there, and then we laughed at them. Well, maybe we're too sophisticated now to laugh at them, but I guarantee you somewhere in the back of everybody's head as they look at Bruce Jenner walk up there in front of a room full of professional athletes, most of whom are male, with his long flowing hair, his pink dress, his fake chest, whatever's going on beneath the belt, his giant man hands and his man voice, and he gets a standing ovation. And as in my flesh, I wanted to mock and make fun and throw jokes. But in my spirit, all I could do was weep. And I'm sure that's what God is doing as he looks at one of his creations, Bruce Jenner, and sees what not only Bruce is doing to himself, but the world applauding as he does it. And it's a sad day here in America. So we're really fortunate today to have Walt Heyer here with us. A Transgender's Faith is the name of the book. I've got the links up on Facebook and Twitter. I'll put those out again. And you can also find that through the homepage, c2atoday.com. But Walt, your website is what? Which one do you want to send them to?
Sexchangeregret.com.
Well, could you just come right out with it? I mean, shouldn't you have a more subtle title? I mean, that is what it is.
You got to spell it out.
You
Sex Change Regret.
And Walt and I just agreed off the air. I was telling him that I did recently, Walt, on the show, talking about a four-year-old whose parents, they were on NPR with this pretty romper room music in the background to make it sound like this is this beautiful story right out of a Disney movie. They're all about transitioning their 4.5-year-old son. An 8-year-old, a 12-year-old, those stories, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie. And I said on the air that, hey, listen, at the very least, we're turning these children into lab rats in our sexual experimentation. At the very worst, we're turning them into sex toys themselves. Mm-hmm. It's that dark and diabolical. It's heartbreaking, yes, but it's also incredibly deviant and just kind of nasty, isn't it?
Well, I look at what my grandmother did to me, and I see the effects of what, you know, I was four years old, 5 years old, same identical time period, and here I am all these years later, and it took me many years till I was 50 years old to be able to get over this struggle. So we have no idea as adults what we're doing to these children who have not a clue.
Not a clue.
About what's going on when parents, and it appears to me almost like some of the parents are trying to show how tolerant and diverse they can be.
Enlightened.
And exactly. And intellectual they can be by changing their kid's gender. It's pretty abhorrent.
Yeah. It's just remarkable. So what was high school days, college age, going into the start of your career early on? What was that like? What was your life like?
My life was actually good. I had a lot of great friends, car clubs. My schoolwork was not good. I was never a very good student because I had this conflict in my head. I felt continued to badger me and prevent me from being a real good, solid student. But I excelled in theater arts, and I did a lot of theater work. I was good in theater arts. I was good at public speaking and did soliloquies and things like that, and enjoyed doing that, moved out of that, and I was great at work. I had a great work ethic. So when I finally went to work, I was very successful at work. And started working in the aerospace industry before I was 20 years old, and started becoming a draftsman and doing printed circuit boards. And that's where my career started to take off. And at that time, I got married, and we had two children.
So you were attracted? Would you say you were attracted to women normally?
Yes.
Totally normal.
Yeah. You see, what people don't understand is that people with gender identity disorder don't always have a sexual identity disorder. They have an identity of self.
Yeah.
So their sexuality can be heterosexual, like Jenner actually talked about. And so we get oftentimes confused this, and we assume that all transgenders are homosexual. And in my experiences, probably 80 to 90% of them are heterosexual with a gender identity issue that doesn't get properly treated.
Did your wife have a clue?
Yeah. You know, I told her about it before we got married, and we just kind of blew it off as, yeah, it's not a big deal. It'll go away. Well, it didn't go away. 17 years of marriage, it didn't go away. But eventually I got very successful in my career and worked on the Apollo space missions as associate design engineer and became an executive for a large automobile company in the country. So,
now, what about your kids?
My kids, when I went through the change, they're great kids. When I went through the change, my daughter did not speak to me for 8 years, and I didn't actually blame her. And my son had told me, he said, you know, I would have preferred you had cancer and died because at least then I could talk to somebody about it.
Wow. Yeah. So it was.
So the impact that we're having on our kids as adults, we can't even measure because they're going to carry this. You know, we look at this as just the transgender, but man, it's like setting off a hand grenade in the middle of a family if you've been married and have children. Really devastating to the kids and the family.
Yeah, and then when we come back from the break, I'm going to get into that, as I read from that introduction to your book, A Transgender's Faith. I'm going to get into that when you finally went through with some of these operations, all the physical things you were going through as you were dealing with this this split reality that in private you wanted to be a woman and in public you played the role and looked the role of a man. I want to get into that. And friends, just a fair warning, if you have little kids around and people that you don't want to hear this part of the story, which we have to tell it because you have to have your hearts softened. And instead of, like I said earlier, instead of looking at the transgender, the transvestite, even homosexuals as a circus act, as a circus sideshow, a freak, I often call homosexuals, we've turned them into the lepers of the day and we've completely dehumanized them.
Right.
But in order to understand the depths of what they must go through as they do this to themselves, you have to hear some of those details of what Walt, quite honestly, decided to put himself through. And then how that all came back around, because I mentioned this the other day, Walt, when I was doing that show. As soon as you go down this road, that couple, the NPR couple, who's a 4.5-year-old, is going down this road. They're taking him down this road. They're paying to take him down this road. He's immediately a 41% chance that he's going to try to kill himself.
Absolutely.
And those realities are waiting for them. One side of this story cheers. The other side of the story weeps. The side of the story you're going to hear is Walt's side, which is right from the inside when we come back. This is Steve Noble with Walt Heyer talking about A Transgender's Faith. This is a story that we all need to hear. God cares about Walt. He loves him. He cares about all the other people that are struggling with it. And we must too. This is Steve Noble. Call to action. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble here on Call to Action Radio. The name of the book, A Transgender's Faith. It's available. All you have to, you're going to get some interesting Google responses when you put that in there, so be careful. A Transgender's Faith, sexchangeregret.com is Walt Heyer's website. We have the pleasure, just a great pleasure and an honor today. Walt and his wife are here passing through town. They're from Arizona, actually, and driving through, and they've got all kinds of things. God is opening all kinds of doors for them. And so he's here in the studio today. We're talking about his life story. You're not going to get anywhere near all the details that you can. So this is one of those books. I won't have people on unless I've been diving into the book myself. I just got it and have gone through half of it. I will definitely finish it probably on the plane tonight. And it's just a wonderful read. It's something that we all need to get familiar with because the world is very familiar with it. And you can run, but you can't hide. So this is a great resource, a great story, a great testimony, A Transgender's Faith. Sexchangeregret.com is Walt's website and all kinds of resources there. But we were talking, there you are. Now you've got a successful career. You're married. You have two children, Walt. Mm-hmm. And your son said he would rather you have had cancer because at least he could talk to people about that. My father wants to become a woman is a bit of a difficult conversation to try to talk to anybody about.
Right.
What brought you to the point where you were ready to do all the physical work, that the operations and everything else that went into that? And I know we have to be careful, but, you know, be as honest and as graphic, I guess, as you need to be.
Yeah, distress. I mean, when you're now at the age of 39, I guess, is when I first went in and was diagnosed by Dr. Paul Walker, who is the guy who wrote the Harry Benjamin International Standards of Care and the Treatment and Diagnosis of Gender Dysphoria. So I felt like I was in good hands. Sure. I was a person with a good income and could afford to go see him, and he diagnosed me right away. Yes, you have gender dysphoria, and what the treatment should be is hormones and surgery. Well, you know, that's pretty tough to take in when you think about it. So I went through a process of about 2 years of considering this before I actually went back to him 2 years later and contemplating this during the 2 years, talking to my wife, talking about the implications and the struggles, and realized that if I was going to get this purple dress out of my head, you know, this stress that I had since I was 4 years old, I needed to change genders. I was absolutely convinced it was the right thing to do, the proper thing to do, to get well and not have the stress and the issues I had. So in 2 years, I went back to Paul Walker. He diagnosed me a second time, wrote the letter, and said, yes, you can be approved for surgery. And then so I made the appointment in 1983, it's been over 30 years ago, for the surgery and underwent the gender reassignment surgery. At the time, I was still an executive, a top executive. Wow. With a very large $300 million corporation.
Now, what were some of the external things, the surgery itself, which we'll handle carefully in a minute, but yeah. Some of the other things, you mentioned hormones and stuff. What all is on that laundry list of changing from a man to a woman externally?
Well, you do facial peels with acid stuff, and they start to change the skin. You get a nose job, you get chin job, Adam's apple work, breast implants, as much stuff as you can afford. I didn't spend $4 million like Jenner did, yeah. But you spend a little bit of money to get as good a results as you can, so that, because everybody wants to pass. You don't want to be looking like a man in a dress. Yeah. So you do a lot of work. And fortunately, in my case, I was very small, so it wasn't, you know, I wasn't 6'3", and so it was much easier for me to pull some of this off.
Was the operation itself, to just to kind of get down to brass tacks here,
yeah.
Could I say amputation and implantation? Is that?
Well, actually, what people don't realize is that they take the male genitals and they reverse the penis and put it inside. So they don't take it off. Hmm. It's there. Everything that was there is still there. They just take it and put it inside. So it's really a reversal. And so that's what the procedure is. It's just tucking it back in and making it appear as though.
Yeah.
So there's no female parts in any of these people.
Yeah.
You know, it's all...
It's just an illusion.
All what I call phony baloney. That's me. That's from my own perspective.
I appreciate your frankness. All right, so you're on the other side of that. You're recovering, and now, Walt, you're looking in the mirror. What was your name at the time?
Laura.
So Laura's looking at the mirror, And did the voice go away? Was everything fine? Full reconciliation? Everything's good in Walt slash Laura's world?
Yeah, I mean, when I had all that great relief, I had all that excitement, I had all that euphoria, I thought, man, the weight of the world is lifted off of me. This is wonderful. It's exciting. And I began to go down this road. I eventually, for a while, I struggled to get work because I didn't really know how I was going to fit into the world as a female and being in my 40s. And eventually I was able to get a job with the federal government at FDIC. And because of my history and it, with a large corporation, I was able to move up in management and had a good job, had a good income. And then I went to work at the Postal Service also. And then later on, I started studying psychology at the University of California at Santa Cruz. And I began, as I studied psychology.
Why did you decide to do that?
Well, because I wanted to become a counselor. I thought, you know, I wanted to sit down and help people. I wanted to sit across from people and talk to people who'd been through the same thing I had. And I didn't know where this was going to go, but I was also studying alcoholism and the whole psychological thing. And I realized in those studies at UC Santa Cruz that nobody actually changes gender. It's, you know, it's a delusional concept I was learning from my own experience that this was a delusional concept that, again, I go back and I always say, why do someone want to not be who they are right, so that they can become someone who they're not? I mean, right there, that should tell us wow, that the person is struggling. And we shouldn't bash them for it. We should look at them and try to understand how they got that way.
Yeah, well, physically, if somebody's got a physical problem, a handicap, they've been deformed in an accident, whatever, you don't look at them and cast them out.
Right.
You look at them and your response should be compassion.
Right.
But now let me ask you this question. Were you a Christian at the time when all this was happening?
I was. Yeah.
So you were a born again Jesus all the way, not good works, not mushy Protestant stuff. You were actually a born again Christian.
Well, let me put it like this. I thought I was.
Okay.
You know, so
I can relate to that.
You know, I thought I was doing all the right things. You know, when I was a male, Walt, with the family, we went to Forest Home Christian Conference Center. We did all the camps. I was, you know, part of the church.
Yeah.
I was heavily invested in it. What I didn't really realize was the redemptive power of Jesus Christ when you're struggling. I think what I thought was that God did not understand my particular issue and that I needed to deal with it and I didn't need to really turn it over to Christ.
Hmm. Wow. So when did you start to kind of come to this realization that I have to change back?
Well, when I hit the 8-year mark or somewhere near the 8-year mark and in studying psychology, I started looking at myself, you know, this whole thing is absolutely bogus. You know, here I had all this euphoria, and I always liken it to the guy who went to the bar and is having a good time drinking it up in the bar.
Sure.
And he's just having the greatest
in
time.
In the moment.
In the moment. This is fabulous. You're just enjoying the heck out of it. And the next morning you wake up, you're throwing up in the toilet, and you got a terrible headache. Well, that's kind of what happens after 6 or 8 years. And I found from the people who write me, there's a wall somewhere between 6 and 12 years that people come to. Some of them, they don't always come back, but they always hit a realization, you know, I probably shouldn't have done this.
Wow.
It's not that good. It didn't fix anything. I've still got the same problems. I'm just wearing red pumps now instead of, you know, tennis shoes.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
you know, nothing really changes except your appearance. You're still struggling with the same issues.
So what do you do when you come to that realization?
Well, then, you know, then I started attending church. I started working with a church. It was funny because, you know, churches don't deal with this very well.
No.
And I went to one church.
I don't think anybody does.
I went to one church with my psychologist, who is a Christian psychologist at Fuller Seminary in Pasadena, and he knew a pastor. He said, Walt, you got to go to this church. So I went to the church as Laura because this was going to be kind of my way to start the journey back to Walt. And so I went to church, and the pastor gave the message. I'm sitting with a bunch of ladies, you know, pastor's wife and stuff, and they accepted me. They were real kind to me.
Did they know?
They knew. Well, I don't know if they knew or not, but the pastor knew, so I'm thinking that he—
I mean, I'm looking at a picture from 1984. I wouldn't have guessed it.
Yeah, so I don't know if they did or not, but I know that Sunday afternoon, that pastor who gave the message came to my house, knocked on the door, and I opened the door up thinking he's going to welcome me because I didn't have a chance to talk to him. And all he said to me was, we don't want your kind in our church.
Oh, man.
And so I looked at him with kind of a smile like I am now, going, really? I said, what kind do you want? Do you want all the fixed ones? You know, so
that's going to be a church with exactly zero members.
Yeah, exactly. So when I finally hit this church in the Bay Area with Pastor Jeff Farrar, Jeff and the church really began to embrace me. And this was kind of a key moment because I decided after my first experience at church, I wanted to sit down with this pastor and see where he was coming from before he knocked on my door.
Yeah.
So I sat down with Jeff and I said, Jeff, are you going to try to change me? Meaning, are you going to, I'm Laura, are you going to try to change me to Walt? And he kind of leaned back in his big old chair behind his desk and he said, you know, my job is to love you. It's God's job to change you.
Amen. Wow.
And so that was like it.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, nobody's trying to do anything to me. It's my relationship with Christ that's going to change me. And I began to understand that. So that was the pivotal point. If I began to turn to Christ and not people, if I didn't turn to the surgeon, if I didn't turn to the psychologist to get my fix and turn to Christ to get my fix, my life could be restored. And that's exactly what happened.
Wow. So just take me through the steps, what happened next real quick. We've got about 2.5 minutes before we hit the break.
Well, in a short term, I was also recovering from alcoholism, right. And so I was working, those people that know the steps, I was working on my fourth step, went to a psychologist and had written out my fourth step and was talking to him about the fourth step. And during that time, we wrote it all out, and we talked about it, prayed over each step. He was a Christian psychologist, went outside. And everything I'd written down on the paper, we lit it on fire, symbolically let it burn up as if it was gone away and put it at the Lord's feet.
Yeah.
Went inside and began to pray. And as we prayed, one of the most amazing things that happened was during the prayer, the Lord came to me. Actually, visually, I could see the Lord with his arms stretched out to me. And at the same time, I could see myself as a baby wrapped up like a baby would in a blanket, and he reached out and picked me up and held me in his arms and said to me, you are now safe with me forever. And from that day forward, my life was transformed,
wow,
redeemed, and from that day forward, my life was restored to Walt.
Wow. And so after that, and praise God for that, and I've been around some really interesting people. God's allowed that with the radio and everything. So when people start talking to me about visions of the Lord and visitations, I don't freak out like most Western Christians. If I can find it in the Bible, Walt, I'm pretty comfortable with it out there today. And so then where did your life go from there? Now you're kind of put back on this path. God and through the power of the Holy Spirit is restoring you. What did the future look like? Because we're also, when we come back from the break, I want you to introduce us to this beautiful woman that's off to your left.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that happened was that I began to, what was funny was I was Walt, right? Now I'd been restored.
Yeah.
But because I'd had so much surgery and so much hormone injections and everything, I looked like a female dressing like a guy. So, you know.
Maybe it just looked like Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
You ever heard that one before?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I saw him last night, I think. It was pretty pathetic. But anyway, so all of a sudden you've got another thing you got to deal with because there's an element of time,
yeah,
you know, that you're going through. And so it took time.
Wow.
It took time.
Well, God's pretty good with time, and it doesn't really bug him. I love what C.S. Lewis says. God operates in the unbounded now. So we think it's a long time God doesn't operate like that. Thank God. We're here talking to Walt Heyer. We're going to hear what's going on today and how God's using him presently, and you'll get to meet his wife. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble here on Call to Action Radio, and this is one of those days. Walt Heyer's here with me. An incredible book, A Transgender's Faith, an incredible story in God's goodness and patience and faithfulness and his restorative powers. I mean, a man that becomes a woman can become a man again. I mean, even a dead person isn't too far gone for God, and we have to remember that. So a lot of you out there probably have stories, personal stories, maybe it's you. Maybe it's a husband or a wife or a son or a daughter, a prodigal, whatever it is, and you think it's hopeless. I'm pretty sure Walt Heyer's here today to tell you that it's not hopeless.
No, it's not hopeless at all. It is. The Lord is there if we're ready to bend our knee to him and acknowledge that we've made a mistake, admit that we were wrong, that God didn't make a mistake we made a mistake in seeking out help through men instead of seeking a restoration and redemption through Christ.
Yeah, and one of the things that he did, this is kind of almost a Job-like aspect of this, and we're not going to drag her on the air and put her through that, but your beautiful wife sitting off to the left, what happened there?
Well, you know, I was speaking at a church on a recovery ministry on a Friday night, and a friend that knew me brought her, and she listened to me, and she nudged her friend and said, "That's the kind of guy I want. He's already been through it. He's been redeemed. He's restored. All the junk is gone." So if you want to know about my wife, get A Transgender's Faith, the best chapter in the book she wrote.
Oh, I'm excited. All right, I'm going to be reading that one on the plane down to Atlanta tonight. Okay, so God's obviously got you on a mission with the Bruce Jenner thing, and you know Dr. Paul McHugh, who wrote the article in the Wall Street Journal. And all of a sudden, Walt, God's using you all over the place. What's your mission?
My mission is to reach as many people as I can, 100 million, 200 million, whatever it is, all the way around the world. I want to reach people with the restorative power of Jesus Christ for transgenders. I want the church to understand that they need to reach out to transgenders, not reject them, not say, "You are not the kind of person I want in my church." Those are actually the people we want in our church. Yeah. If we don't come next to them, we can't offer them the redemption of Jesus Christ. We need to embrace them. We need to spend time with them. And we need to get to know them. We need to know that they're struggling. They are not all homosexual. Some of them are. But no matter what they're struggling with, our job is to be the heart of Christ and to love on them and show them who Christ is. And we don't do that by pointing fingers at them.
I would assume you're getting a lot of opposition.
You know, I don't get a lot of opposition. I get a little bit of opposition, but, you know, I have spent a lot of time in crafting a message that isn't a condemning message. Yeah. We're all suffering. We all have issues. And if we can identify the issues that we have and come to Christ with them and share that struggle with another individual like I did in the church and have people surround you. I mean, I started a prayer letter over 30 years ago in that church. Wow. That I still write to many of the same people today. So once a month, I write a prayer letter. People pray for me. It's so important to have a prayer team and to have good support and good loving support around you through the power of Christ. No matter what's happened to you, no matter what the depths are, you can be redeemed and restored and can serve Christ.
Has it surprised you at all, Walt, how God, because you had just mentioned recently a few weeks ago when kind of a lot of this stuff started to break and a couple months ago with Bruce Jenner, and you did how many interviews was that?
I did 45 radio and TV shows in 2.5 weeks.
My goodness. Does it surprise you at all how all of a sudden God is using all of this?
It is. It's amazing. And in my website, I got 96,133 hits in 30 days.
And how many had you gotten in the time previous to that?
30,000.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, boom.
But I get 30 to 40,000 looks every 30 days.
Now, one thing, we were just talking about this off the air, and I'm going to do what I can here in Raleigh, North Carolina, where we're broadcasting from. You mentioned this, and this is sad, and this is part of our challenge, and oftentimes our challenge is more inside the family of faith than it is outside. A lot of churches not comfortable yet putting you in the pulpit to share your story.
No, I make, you know, churches get wobbly knees around me. It's like, oh boy, you know, what are we going to do with this one? You know, I still scare people. There's still that unspoken kind of, I don't know if I want him in there. What's this going to stir up? Well, you know, if you believe in the power and grace of Jesus Christ, I always say, what are you afraid of?
That's right. That's right. Well, when we connected on the email, I wasn't afraid. I was juiced up. I've been jacked up about this since we first emailed a couple weeks ago.
So have I. And that's why I'll drive anywhere to get across from somebody to get the message out. That's what I want to do. That's my mission. Christ gave me redemption, and that redemption, I want to open that package up and share it with other people so they can be redeemed and restored just as I have.
I guarantee you there's some people listening to us right now across the country, Walt, that are in a situation that seems unredeemable. They've done things that they think might be unforgivable, that there is no hope. Speak to them in just the last minute and a half here. The people that think, whatever their situation is, might not be the same as what yours has been in the past. But what do you say to them?
Well, whatever you're going through, no doubt it is troubling, and it is just huge. And I know you feel like, you know, as I did, that I even said to myself one time, I'm on the junk heap of life. I'm trash. I'm thrown away. I'm garbage. And I use those words. But What I didn't realize was those are precisely the people that Jesus Christ wants to reach out to and redeem.
Yeah, and he does.
And he does.
And even when you go through down a road that you went through and something that the vast majority of us will never be able to relate to, he was always there.
Yeah.
He was always waiting.
And I'm proof.
And you are absolutely proof. Isn't that awesome?
That's awesome.
It's just wonderful. Walt Heyer, what a blessing. That the website, friends, get to that as soon as you can. I want you to get the book. I want you to read the book. It's got WaltHeyer.com. There's that one out there. But SexChangeRegret.com. And I've got all the links up on my Facebook page and on Twitter and on the homepage at C2ATOday.com. Walt, can we do this again?
Absolutely.
Mi casa, su casa. So we'll definitely.
All right. You bet.
Thanks for being here. Okay, friends, tomorrow, Black and White Day with my older brother from another mother, Bishop Wooden. He's going to be here with Chris Connell. That will be hard to believe. Tomorrow on Call to Action. We'll see you then.